You're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Urban Connections. I'm your host, Donna Morrow Wolf. We are joined in studio once again by our dear friend and sister, Maria Whitaker. Welcome back to Urban Connections, Maria.
Hi, Donna. Can anybody hear me?
Everybody can hear you.
Okay, great. Hi, everybody.
Well, you can't hear yourself? Is that it? You can't hear yourself?
Testing, testing, testing.
Well, we'll get it straight.
Okay.
We'll get it all straight. But this session of our monthly food fight is in memoriam for Charity Hicks, Detroit human rights activist, who was a guest, thanks to Maria, on an Urban Connections food fight broadcast February 22nd of this year. Charity is a beloved Detroit community leader and commons advocate. She passed away July 8th from injuries sustained after being struck by a hit-and-run driver in Manhattan in New York City. And Urban Connections will rebroadcast segments of our February conversation with Charity. Charity Hicks had been in a coma since being hit by a car at a bus stop on 10th Avenue on May 31st. She was in New York City to speak at a conference. The medical examiner says she died of blunt impact injuries. The driver then fled the scene on foot and hasn't been caught. And Charity Hicks was the catalyst. Not only was she involved, but she was the catalyst in many local and national campaigns for the environment, for water, for social justice and food security, and she helped found the Great Lakes Commons Network with many other organizations from around the Great Lakes. So rest in peace, respect eternally to our sister, Charity Mahona Hicks. Maria?
Yeah, thanks, Donna. How much time do we have before you want to start playing some of what you...
Well, you just say what you want to
okay.
say.
Okay, great. Well, I just wanted to add a few things. Charity Louise Darlene Hicks was not my biological sister, but in every other way she was my sister. And we worked very closely together, particularly on food movement issues, and particularly co-founded a Black Food Sovereignty Initiative together because our work showed that people of Black African descent from the local to the global levels were the people most negatively and directly impacted by our food and agriculture systems from the local to the global levels. And consequently, it was our vision to organize ourselves to try to build our collective power to try to transform the policy that was so negatively and directly impacting people of Black African descent. On that note, I wanted to add that my sister Charity worked from the local to the global level. She worked actively in Detroit on the many human rights issues that you mentioned, including being water of the current movement, water movement that recently started in response to the city's efforts to shut off 150,000 of their residents' water, and that would be of their poor residents' water, because those corporations who are also behind on their water bills, they are not shutting their water off. So she worked on those many local issues. She was the Eat for Health Food Fellow and on the United States Food Sovereignty Alliance and many other national projects. As well, she worked on the global level with Local to Global Advocates for Justice, the organization that I founded. She was one of the major board members of that organization, representing the Eastern Michigan Environmental Action Coalition, for which she was the policy director. She also worked with Grassroots Global Justice Alliance, attending the U.S. The World Social Forum in Dakar in 2012 and then in Tunis in 2013. She also worked with the Movimiento Sin Tierra in Brazil, or the Movement of Landless Workers in Brazil. And one of the most inspiring or uplifting experiences she had was with them. And I remember she wrote to us after being at one of their meetings, "I now have hope that we can really change things for the better." Charity is survived by her husband, Louis Humbo, as well as other family members, and a vibrant community of social change activists, artists, and people of love and faith there in Detroit, working to build a loving, just, safe, healthy, and peaceful community. The last campaign that Charity started, which the city of Detroit is carrying forward, and which they are asking those of us who love Charity to carry forward, is her Be Love campaign. At her last rally with against Monsanto, Charity in the community, Charity was quoted as saying, this is about love. We are here for love. We love ourselves. We love our families. We love our children. We love our communities. And we want to build love. And so that was from there on, Charity and her community began building a Be Love campaign. I think the struggle that I was in Detroit for Charity's homecoming celebration last Saturday at exactly this time, and also for a conference in Detroit at that time, which is Roots and Remedies 3, the national gathering of grassroots organizations by the Praxis Project, whose executive director is Makani Temba. And that's a wonderful interactive space for grassroots organizations to come together to plan, plot, and build, basically, once again, more campaigns for love for their children and their communities, to build loving, sustainable, healthy, just communities. And the biggest thing going on at that time, once again, was the response to the proposed cut off of 150,000 poor people's water. And that was very difficult to witness, that going on in that city, along with the loss of such a brilliant and extraordinary woman, activist, leader, orator, community member. Oh, and one more thing. Charity Hicks was also one of the co-founders of the Detroit Black Community Food Security Network in 2007. Mm-hmm. And she was in them in various important capacities up until 2011.
On the voiceofdetroit.net website, they're referring to Charity Hicks as a justice powerhouse. And one of the phrases I attribute to Charity that sticks with me is, she was about the business of waging peace. The concept, the idea of waging peace, and that we can do that as, you know, sentient beings. We can choose to wage war, or we can wage peace. And peace is the humane way, that the sustainable way that prolongs life. So,
yeah, and I think what Charity was saying when she started rhapsodizing, and I watched the video where she begins to rhapsodize about love, and
what
I think
do you mean
what
by rhapsodize?
Well, it was sort of I could tell she was at the Monsanto March, and she was orating. And she was talking, and all of a sudden she started talking about love, and she kind of hit the zone, and she was rhapsody. It was a period of rhapsody. And I think what she was saying is, we're choosing life. We're choosing life, not death. We're choosing life and building, not death, construction, and war. We're choosing love. We're choosing our families. We're choosing our children, not money, not power, not destructive power, mm-hmm. Massive formations of concentrations of wealth for massive control and oppression of people.
And massive consumption of these.
And hallelujah, thanks for that. And mm-hmm. massive consumption mm-hmm. and massive distraction mm-hmm. from our human essence. One of the things I got to share with Charity before she transcended was something that was written by a man known as Subcomandante Marcos, He was the fictitious leader of the Zapatista movement in Mexico, which I don't know as much as I'd like to about it, except that it's an indigenous Mexico in the southeastern part of Mexico, and that is still under attack by the government. And they were very focused on community-centeredness and really rejecting the idea of having to have a leader and all these different personalities. It was they were really working very hard and still are to remain community-centered and to have unity and for people to give up their individuality in the best sense of that word. Mm-hmm. And very different than kind of what we know from our Western modern civilization.
Right.
And so they created a fictitious figure named San Comandante de Marcos. But his last words when they got rid of this persona that they needed to speak to the outside world were, and I wish I'd brought them. I could bring them another time and read them. But basically were they along the lines of, you know, we were in a war because we as indigenous people were under attack by our government. But despite that, we chose to not just fight a war, we chose to build. We chose to build schools and gardens and hospitals that are now world famous for our people. We chose life over death. Mm-hmm. But in so doing, we knew we had to die to live because they were under attack.
Wow.
So it is the most beautiful thing I've ever read. And I'll bring it in for one of our next food fights.
Please
but I had shared that with Charity, and I really very much think that she was very much at that point, and I very much think that Detroit is very much at that point as well. The people of Detroit who are lifting up humanity instead of corporatism, are lifting up babies, as Charity used to say. They shared that in her funeral. She always talked about it. It's about the babies. It's about the babies. Lifting up babies, you know, as opposed to dollar bills, as opposed to big buildings, as opposed to just you know, cars and consumption, as you say.
Yeah.
And
stuff. The stuff.
Stuff.
Yeah.
You know, babies, not stuff.
Yeah, babies.
You know, and, you know, kind of to help me deal with losing this beautiful manifestation of Charity as a human woman on earth. You know, I've been listening to Thich Nhat Hanh, a leading Buddhist monk figure in the world right now from Plum Village. And he talks very much how we use consumption, whether it's reading or food or material things, to distract us from ourselves. Mm-hmm. And he calls on us to do the very simple thing of meditating, of breathing slowly to take us back to ourselves, mm-hmm. To take us back home so that we can care for ourselves, so that we can have insights into the reality of our existence. And I think that Charity was about all of this.
Absolutely. I sense that as well. Your Marcos figurehead that they created in Mexico to help them glue their community together, they were willing
actually,
to
he was
give
more
up
for the outside world.
Oh, for the outside world.
Yeah,
okay.
They didn't need a leader like that. They were very community-centered.
They had to have a rep out there in
the
greater world.
Yeah, they used him to represent themselves to the outside world. And then they figured they no longer needed him, but they were strong enough, and they got rid of him.
Okay,
so it was his last words.
The idea of the individual giving up the individual self for the greater good, but in doing that, you become a greater individual. That's when you start working for the community. You hone your skills, and every talent and every passion that you have can shine because you're using that work, that individual skill and talent for good. But so we're gonna take a break, and when we come back, we're going to listen to some. Go ahead, Marie.
I just wanted to say, and you know that's a real struggle for me for just because of my particular history. This whole idea of individuality, and of course, you know, being from such a Western, you know, modern civilization where it's all about the individual. But, and I love the way you said that, you know, and it's all an education to me. But once again, like reading and listening to Thich Nhat Hanh, he very much talks about that. He talks first about how the individual can do nothing, but as a community can do everything, and that we have to build community. And in his language, they call it a sangha. And so one of the first things he did was build his sangha, where they all meditate together and then reach out to take this message. And, you know, and he says in order to do that, you have to give up your individuality. But he's not talking about giving up what's sacred about you. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're saying is exactly that. You become something part of a bigger whole that enhances that, and allows you to make some sort of contribution, because on your own you can't.
Right.
And very much in Detroit, they are very community. It's all about the community, and it's not without conflicts, of course.
Apparently,
but they
not.
Are very much, building a community to try to succeed and building humanity in Detroit.
So the Huffington Post is writing about a couple of days ago, 15,000 Detroit homes had their water shut off. The NAACP Legal Defense Fund has filed a lawsuit against Detroit. Thousands gathered in protest over the weekend, and advocates are calling on the United Nations to help. Well, of course, this is a human rights issue. But the Detroit residents themselves are fighting, but concerned non-residents of Detroit have to fight as well. So there's apparently $90 million worth of past due water bills, and the Detroit Water and Sewerage Department has shut off the water for more than 15,000 delinquent households. And again, where does that impact the most? In the black and brown community.
Yeah, because,
so
I mean,
really up
you said it was, what, $15 million of
$90 million.
$90 million. Well, 45,000 of those belong to one particular corporation.
Right,
and there's many, many corporations.
Movement.
But they're only shutting the water off for poor people.
Mm-hmm.
They're not shutting the water off for the corporations who have back bills.
Yes.
So they are targeting poor people who have bills of $150 or more, but they're not targeting the corporations. And, yes, the human rights, the UN did declare this a human rights violation, that there is a human right to water. People from Canada are bringing over water. And also I wanted to mention, Donna, I had a conversation with Charity's beloved husband recently, and he did share with me that on Monday they did find the driver
who hit her.
Yeah, he was in New Jersey, and so he will be brought to justice. He's
good.
A 30 to 40-year-old man who was driving that, I think it was like an SUV-type vehicle.
Okay. All righty. Well, we're going to take a break and come back and listen to some segments of that talk we had with Charity Hicks back in February 2014 here at 90.1 FM KKFI on the Urban Connections program. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Did you know that you can donate that unwanted car, boat, truck, or motorcycle to KKFI and get a tax deduction for your donation? Find out more by calling 866-628-2277.
You're tuned to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Urban Connections. I'm your host, Donna Wolf. Our guest in studio today is Maria Hicks. She is I'm sorry, Maria.
I love that. I'd be happy to be Maria. I am Maria Hicks.
Maria
don't worry,
Hicks
Don. I got
Whitaker.
You. I got you. Don't worry. In my heart, I'm Maria Hicks and Charity Whitaker, too. So
yes, all right. So,
we're sisters, like I told you.
Maria Whitaker.
Yeah, let me say a couple things before we turn
it
back over to you, Donna.
Local Food Advocates for Justice.
Yeah.
Go
so
ahead.
A couple things, too. Donna mentioned to me in the break, this is a show about food. And, you know, of course, Charity was a great food justice, food sovereignty, food and health advocate and activist. But the water issue directly impacts food because, of course, we need water to grow food. Mm-hmm. So Detroit has a very vibrant urban gardening movement. And, in fact, the Black Urban Gardeners National Group is going to have their national conference in Detroit from October 17th through the 19th this year. Mm-hmm. For people who are interested. But so one of the big questions is, you know, if they are successful somewhat or not, you know, in turning off people's water, how is that going to affect the urban gardening movement in Detroit?
I wondered that.
Mm-hmm. And then, I spoke when I was in Detroit for this conference and for Charity's homecoming celebration. I spoke to two very involved activists in the water movement who worked very closely with Charity. That was Lila Cabell of Upbraiding Racism, Planting Justice in the Detroit Food System. She's a longtime Detroit activist and the mother of Detroit, the mother of many movements, and the mother of many. A very kind and loving visionary leader there in Detroit, as well as author Tawana Petty from the Grace Lee Boggs Center. She's on the board member there, and she's also a poet. And Lila informed me that the real reason behind the shutoffs was an attempt to privatize the Great Lakes water, which is 20% of the world's fresh water. So that was her understanding of what was going on. As well, many people have talked about, you know, turning people's water off. People's water is one way to drive them out of their homes and for their homes to be possessed by someone else. And so it's, I think, also a process of what we call gentrification, colonialization, but which is beginning some sort of mass movement of peoples based on class out of the urban centers of cities all around the country, if not in many places in the world as well.
Okay. Let's listen to the voice of Charity.
Oh, can we ask for people
ready?
To call in?
Sure, people can call in.
Okay, by the way, so if anybody out there, you know, knows Charity or wants to say something about Charity or the water movement, it's calling from Detroit or anywhere else around the country or here in Kansas City, please give a holler. We'll interrupt the program and put you on air. We'd be really love to have you, as this is a memorial to Charity Mahona Hicks. Thank
okay.
you. Donna, what's the call-in number?
The call-in number? 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. Okay, I'm going to roll tape on the February session with Charity Hicks here at 90.1 FM KKFI. This is your community radio station. Urban Connections is the program. I'm your host, Donna Wolf. Maria Whitaker's in studio with us today. It's another food fight session here on Urban Connections at 90.1 FM. Food Fight. And that is by Seneca Remix, Earth Amplified. You're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Urban Connections. I'm your host, Donna Morrow Wolf. We are joined by two guests today via telephone hookup. We have Charity Hicks online with us right now. She's a policy fellow with Everyone at the Table for Health, or Eat for Health. She's joining us online from Detroit, and we are awaiting a call from our good amiga, Maria Whitaker, who's in Cuba. And we are trying to establish that link with her right now, but we'll just go ahead and get started with Charity. Charity, you're on the air at 90.1 FM. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, it's wonderful to have you here with us. Please tell us about your organization. I've got another incoming call coming, and I hope that's Maria. So while you sort of enlighten our listeners about what you do, I'll try to hook up Maria on the line. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Everyone at the Table for Health is a public policy initiative focusing on people of color communities, low-income communities, urban, I mean suburban and rural, looking at how people of color and urban areas.
Go ahead.
Besides the federal government and even state government. So when we say everyone at the table for health, it's actually a justice-based transformative movement to get poor people into policymaking and policy decision-making. So trying to leverage myself, I have colleagues across the country, Nelson Coscarillo from the Farm Worker Support Center, Dana from New Orleans, her and Triste are working with the Coastal Community Collaborative around coastal fisheries, and Diana Lopez from Southwest Workers Union. We're all engaged in trying to get some policy wins for our communities.
Great. Thank you so much. And hopefully I've got Maria on the line now. Maria, are you there?
I am. Hi, everybody. Hi, Charity. Hi, Donna.
Hola, amiga, calling us from Cuba. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to see Charity on the line and telling the community about the Eat for Health Food Policy Fellowship that she's holding.
Absolutely. And Maria Whitaker is the Program Director for Local to Global Advocates for Justice. Thank you so much for coming back on, Maria, so we can continue this food fight. It's a serious thing.
Yeah, and so I don't know how much Charity has told you already, but as you know, Local to Global Advocates for Justice is trying to start a food fight in Kansas City and trying to organize Kansas Cityans, and I wanted to take some inspiration from the work that Charity and so many others are doing in Detroit. And I was hoping that maybe Charity, you might just tell us some about what the have you already talked about the problems are that are you all are addressing there in Detroit around or are aware of there in Detroit around food and health.
Go ahead, Charity.
Thank you, Maria and Donna. I think on the national level, and the real reason why I'm thinking on the national level is because so much of our lives is contextualized by federal policy. So the federal government actually is the biggest investor in our food system, particularly on the access side with food stamps. So currently the Farm Bill just reported out a week ago. President Obama signed it here in Michigan, but poor people took a hit.
Mm-hmm.
And we took a hit because they actually divested economically from the most vulnerable members of our community, which is children and our elderly who are on fixed income, and literally divested from our communities with an $8 billion cut to food stamps. So in Detroit, we took a hit. Kansas City took a hit. Washington, D.C. took a hit. And all poor communities around the country who have not came up out of the recession have taken a hit. And so basically what we're attempting to do here in Detroit is to repair and restore our regional food system so we can develop some resiliency, some kind of elasticity, so we won't, when the hits come, we won't be so devastated.
Charity, talk about the food system as it is today as compared to what it was maybe 20 years or so ago when it was perhaps a little healthier for the people.
Probably I would take it back to about 30, 40 years ago.
Okay.
To the baby boomers. I think baby boomers, everybody who's 50-something, it's probably the last generation that ate wholesome food.
Mm-hmm.
Since that time, the Gen X community and the millennials have been under a lot of food products, high fructose corn syrup, hydrogenated vegetable oils, food products put with plastic, and other non-food items. So we've seen an epidemic rise in type 2 diabetes across the country. I'm pretty sure Kansas City is impacted, Detroit is impacted. And so our food system really right now is controlled by extremely large corporations with 5,000-mile food supply chains, with a whole lot of non-food products that they're feeding us that's creating health destruction and environmental and ecological destruction, monocultures, diseases, pest outbreaks. And so our food system is literally teetering on collapse. And we're right now in a worldwide food crisis dealing with bees. So several thousand bees around the world, large colonies, have been dying.
Mm-hmm.
And bees are a chief pollinator for almost all of our food, our specialty crops. And so if bees gone, we're definitely in trouble. Currently, right now, we have nitrogen overload, we have runoff, we have these pests and these seeds that are not fruitful. Who would trick a plant to make fruit and then take a seed? So it's shockingly kind of Frankenstein, what we're eating. And we're all being impacted. The earth is being impacted, our health is being impacted, and our economy is being impacted.
So you said a lot right there. I'd like for you to talk about, if you would, some non-food products that are common in our food system today that maybe people are not aware of, and ways that we can, you know, avoid consuming non-food products.
Well, let me start with ways of this a policy frame around it. Technically, right now, we have a debate going on a national level called country of origin labeling.
Mm-hmm.
When we eat or we buy stuff, normally it's a tag that says made in China, made in Venezuela, made in Cuba. Normally, that informs the purchaser or the consumer the origin
and
who crafted things. Right now, we're eating food with no understanding of whether or not the ingredients are genetically modified. We don't know where they came from. And so that puts the consumer, us as eaters, at a disadvantage where we can't effectively have choice on whether or not we're going to eat something that is made, you know, 5,000 miles away or something that's made around the corner.
Right.
So that solution as a policy frame is we need country of origin labeling on food.
Okay.
Where did this grape come from? Where did this pear come from? Where did this orange come from? So that we can effectively put the power in the hands of the eater so they can properly choose where their food comes from. So that's the biggest thing. One of the current things that's happening is Subway in their bread put a non-food item in it that is really a plastic. It allows for the bread to be uniform and consistent. And the FDA and the EPA and the USDA, and I'm using alphabet soup, but these are all federal agencies that are supposed to protect our health, protect our food and farm systems, protect our environment, and they allow for products in a particular quantity for us to be able to interact with. And so Subway now is in a firestorm on putting plastic in their breads. And so people now want to know what they're eating. So when you go to Subway or you go to these large restaurants or you go to these food outlets or these stores, one of the things that empowers people is to know what you're eating, where it comes from, and whether or not it's been genetically altered.
You know, I saw a documentary recently. I think it might have been on Link TV, something like that. This guy was the grandson of one of the pioneering engineers of plastics. And he did this expose on plastic and how it has inundated our society. It's in everything. It's in the water systems. It's in the air. And and our food is packaged so much in plastic, even organic food. Can you talk about plastics in our environment and in our food system?
Well, the American Council of Plastics did a wonderful, wonderful PR campaign to improve the profile of plastics around our life. Everything from IV bags, they got these medical applications, food applications. Generally, they promote plastics as being safe, helpful, efficient, durable. wonderful, but we have no idea. We're under a grand experimentation on our life. We have a very high concentration now of all types of cancers.
Mm-hmm.
And researchers are just now trying to figure out where is all these cancers coming from.
Right.
They used to say we were genetically predisposed to them, like our genetics kind of like can tip us into a cancer profile or, you know, blood or breast or uterine or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the cancers now are pointing to hormonal and toxicities in our environment. So the same way you can get lung cancer from these small friable particles in working in industrial environments, what is plastic doing to us?
Mm-hmm.
What is the heat? These high concentrated plastics and packaging and wrapping in our cosmetics. Anybody who's using scrubs and soaps, those are plastic particles.
Mm-hmm.
Brighteners in lotion are plastics. So we're constantly consuming and putting on ourselves and eating plastics. And we need to fully, as particularly people of color in urban areas, because so much of our economic profile is like dollar menus,
yes.
Right? We
mm-hmm.
From dollar menus, we eat. Because of our economics, we don't have the purchasing power to really consume things at a very high, you know, scale or
yes.
at the other end. And so we're literally dumped on.
Absolutely.
Poor people are dumped on. We're fed cheaply. We're fed the stuff that is at the bottom and definitely not at the top, barely making food grade anything, and we're eating it. And so poor people in urban communities need to be conscientiously aware on how we're impacting our health and our environment through food.
Okay.
And one of the things is plastic, like cutting open food in plastic.
Yes.
Putting stuff in microwaves in plastic.
Yes.
Are we eating food on glass or on plastic? I would recommend glass.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than plastic Tupperware or plastic trays. So we should be aware that, you know, to try to move away from plastic for everything or anything.
I want to talk about microwaving in general anyway.
That's what the streets them say. That's what the police them say. That's what the Bible them say. If it's called upon lips, it gets the same way now. That's what the Pentagon say. That's what the general say. That's what the empire say. But death down your throat, you get dropped the same way.
There's a war going on inside. No man is safe from DDTs to PCBs. Every corner in the hood got a KFC. Your McD's is crack speed like R.E.D. Jeans. It's everything get the market, ain't all what it seems. Little Debbie bustin' biscuits, a sugar hot fiend. Yeah, ain't nothing but a G thing. GMO, MSG, genocide, the street gangs. Ascertain, a street cane. Monsanto was Rambo, round up with ammo. Who would've known you could die from a diabetes and the itis on the dairy and the dose of the high fructose. If your ribs too close, so you might start a riot, might be a food fighter.
That's what that street them say. That's what the least them say. That's what the Babylon say.
You're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Urban Connections. I'm your host, Donna Wolf, joined in studio by our good friend, Maria Whitaker. This food fight session takes place here on Urban Connections every last Saturday of the month. This session is in memoriam for Charity Hicks, Detroit human rights activist, freedom fighter, who passed away on July 8th after being struck by a hit-and-run driver at a bus stop on 10th Avenue in New York City in Manhattan.
By the way, Donna, she was on the way to the Left Forum, where she'd been invited to be on a panel.
Okay. There's a website called, where was the Praxis Project website? VoiceOfDetroit.net is sharing a link to the Praxis Project, and in it it talks about charities, extraordinary activism, advocacy, and weaving of movements. They called her a movement weaver and policy director for the East Michigan Environmental Action Council, and paying tribute to her there. Charity, in the last week before the accident, Charity spoke on the main stage at the Kellogg Foundation Food and Community Conference. She hosted other Eat for Health fellows on a tour of the historic home, the Cass Corridor Commons, that EMEAC owns and manages and shares with other nonprofits. She helped to co-lead the people's response to the city of Detroit's shut off of thousands of Detroit households' water for non-payment of water, even for water bills as low as $75. Maria?
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people have written about Charity's career accomplishments, and I wanted to take a minute, as long as we were taking a minute away from her talk, just to say something about Charity as a woman. And you know, being her sister, not her biological sister, but her sister in every other way, you know, I got to know Charity as a woman and as a person, and it was, you know, knowing Charity was a very moving experience because she was suffering a lot. She was suffering a lot from in her own life, from her own family life, but as well from what was going on with the people in Detroit, her people, and the people around the world and with whom she was in touch with. And she was very much in agony over that. And a lot of times Charity was very direct, and she is the most authentic activist that I know, and that's one of the reasons that I do love her so much and consider her to be my sister, is because she was authentic. And but I think a lot of her sharpness and directness, from my experience of more intimate times with her, came from the agony that she felt over the and justifiably so, over the agonizing conditions that people were living in. And, you know, I remember one very touching personal moment, you know, having called her from here in Kansas City soon after her father passed away, and how torn up she was. She was in charge of his homecoming celebration alone, and she had gone to his house and just found things that really surprised her that she didn't know about her dad. And she just shared with me how he had been working so hard to take care of them, and had lost his job under really unjust conditions, and how that had so led to challenge him, and how much it hurt her, and it was just so touching to get to know her as a woman. And then, you know, I would call her sometimes, and she would be agonizing over the politics in Detroit, people who were not down for the people who didn't care about the people but were using their story for their own personal gain, and how her own work would be co-opted. And so very, you know, the very most difficult things in life and were really tormenting her. And I think that is why she was an activist, mm-hmm. and, you know, and was being love or waging love. And I think that she was working out of love. And it was that, you know, knowing her as a woman, it was that passion for the people and for righteousness that Charity had, that was really who Charity was, authentically Charity.
All righty, and there's a lot that you can find out about online. And one link is through the voiceofdetroit.net, which is linking to the Praxis Project and to organizations that there's video of her speaking and an audio of her speaking, and lots of information for those of you who are interested. But we're going to continue with another segment of our talk with Charity Hicks here on Urban Connections back in February 2014. This is 90. Go ahead, Mary.
Yeah, also, and once again, if there's those of you out there who want to call in with questions or who know Charity and want to add something, please call in and share.
And
the number is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-5534.
and everything.
Cool. I think we've got a caller on the line. Caller, are you there?
Yes, thank you for your show.
Yes, you're on the air at 90.1 FM. Please tell us your name and where you're calling from.
JP and Shawnee.
Hi, JP. What's your question or comment?
I think a wild-caught salmon is some of the best food you can get, but I noticed that the Bristol Bay up in Alaska is under threat from the Pebble Mine. So that's, I think the listeners should be aware of that, and you can go on the Internet and look it up. But Bristol Bay in Alaska, and I just think that people ought to be aware of that habitat that's being threatened.
Okay. Thank you, JP. Did you want to comment on that, Charity? Thanks, JP.
Thank you.
Yes, JP hit the nail on the head. A lot of our food system is directly impacted by energy, tar sands, nuclear. We don't want any more Fukushimas. You know, Fukushima damaged the coastal fisheries off of Japan.
Yes.
And now people are not eating fish that's caught in the North Japan Sea because of the nuclear radiation spill that happened in the seas. So he's exactly right. The Pebble Mine is creating loss of habitat for wild-caught salmon up in the Bristol. And not only is it in that particular area of Alaska, but the whole of the North Sea is being impacted by energy and tar sands and mining.
And how much from the Fukushima accident is affecting our northwest coast here in North America?
We are under impact. Water moves, air moves. We're all in one big, giant environment. One of the things that the EPA is, and also the USDA is saying, they're monitoring the situation.
Oh,
well,
I feel safer already.
We know that the government's supposed to be monitoring the situation.
Right.
But what I would advise people is to be very aware where food comes from. One of the biggest things that happened in the shale, in the Gulf Coast oil disaster, was the shrimp beds got damaged.
Yes.
And they had to buy out all these shrimpers because crawdad shrimp and the coastal ecology of New Orleans and the Gulf Coast were impacted. So we need to be aware of environmental disasters and how they're impacting our food system. Be very savvy consumers. Know where our fish coming from, our seafood, the shrimp we like to fry and eat. And because this is all part of the food fight. An aware, brilliant, engaged consumer is as powerful as any public policy objective.
And at least
because we are the public and we are the government, and we can shift policy surely by our choice.
It gives us a fighting chance in any event. Yes. Caller, are you there?
Good morning. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm fine. Tell us your name and where you're calling from.
Brother Ron McMillan checking in.
Brother Ron checking in.
Great
good to
show,
hear from
great
you.
Great show.
Great,
Could she speak to this movement on urban gardens and Michelle Obama leading us back to growing our own food and how it can help us, and also Nutriblasting our food and the vegetables that we now consume, and the drought that's in the Midwest. I shut up and listen to her expertise.
Thank you, Brother Ron. Charity, I think Brother Ron had about three questions in there for you.
Is growing, and it is a wonderful movement to inform community around food system. It's not going to feed us completely. We understand that.
Yes.
But we should have a certain percentage, maybe 10 to maybe 15, and then some are even proposing 20% of what we consume in a local frame. Partly what we've done is in the food system is made it so large that we don't know where stuff comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And the supply chains are thousands of miles long.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing in a local and regional food system repairs food to a more fresher and vibrant state. Michelle Obama's Let's Move campaign is actually an assault against childhood obesity. Our babies, all of our babies, Kansas City, Detroit, all over, are suffering from an epidemic of obesity. Our children should be riding bicycles, playing hula hoop, you know, double dutch jump
rope,
you know. And they should be out actively engaged in play. part of the problem with obesity is a lack of recreation, but the other part is what they're eating.
Mm-hmm.
We are feeding our children too many high-calorie, high-sodium, high-fat, high-sugar foods because they taste good. So our biochemistry has been gained. And so what Michelle Obama is trying to do is increase fresh fruits and vegetable consumption among children. So Let's Move becomes the First Lady's initiative to help protect the well-being and safety of children in a life context. Because nine times out of ten, if you have a child who's obese, their quality of life in its trajectory is truncated.
Mm-hmm.
Their life expectancy has been reduced. Their ability to have joint problems and mobility problems that have increased. The incidence and occurrence of type 2 diabetes is through the roof. Heart problems through the roof. So this is a way for us to save the future, inform the health, create local consumption, bring local investment into a local and regional food profile, and create more recreational opportunities for young people to exercise, move, go play, climb trees. Third, nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Our plants and our food system have been gamed. They've been gamed by big corporations who seek to profit from and corner the food system. One of the biggest things they've been playing with is the genetic profile of all of our produce.
Yes.
And all of our foods.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they do the gene manipulation, they're actually also playing with nutrition and the full chemical compounds in the food. And so if anyone has tasted a tomato, an heirloom tomato, this is the taste test of the ages. Eat an heirloom tomato. If you eat tomatoes,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have allergy to them,
mm-hmm.
eat an heirloom tomato and eat just the general one that you purchase from any, you know, retail store.
Yes.
And do a taste test.
Mm-hmm.
Take the heirloom organic and then taste the genetically modified one,
mm-hmm.
and then make a decision on which tastes better.
Okay.
None of our food has any taste in it because when they manipulate the genes, they're also playing with the nutritional profile and the taste profile.
Absolutely.
And so that's the biggest thing. If you want to taste food to taste better, eat organic, eat local, eat heirloom, eat our co-evolutionary food. If you really don't pay attention, what you're eating is foods that not only have no taste, but they're also genetically modified, and so we're all under a grand experiment.
But how difficult is it going to be going forward to eat food produced from heirloom seeds when you have companies like Monsanto that have patented the seeds so that they don't produce, so that the plant that grows doesn't produce a seed?
So this is the heart and the essence of the worldwide food fight.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the commons. Seeds and food system with us is as important as air and water.
Yes.
You cannot commodify all of life. You cannot pimp nature.
Mm-hmm.
You can't wake up and own whole genomes of seeds
mm-hmm.
because you can do it. You can Frankenstein food.
Right.
We have to start to develop grassroots seed banks. Kansas
okay.
City has some seed banks. Detroit has some seed banks. We need to grow the participation in them. We need to teach children what our commons is, the things we all need to live.
Yes.
And we need to hold them in high regard and protect them from commodification and control by corporate entities.
Our air, our water, our food, Kansas City, Detroit,
and all over the world, seed banks and the building of our, so Urban Ag becomes not only to grow food, but it's a way for us to protect our seeds and our heirloom food stuff.
Right on. I think we've got another caller. Caller, are you there? That's going to have to do it for us for this session of Urban Connections. You are listening to the voice of Charity Hicks, this program done in memoriam to Charity, who passed away July 8th in Detroit. Super humanist, activist, freedom fighter. Much love and respect goes out to us from Charity. If you'd like more information, you can check out our website here at kkfi.org. Look in the program guide on Urban Connections, and you can click on the link to read more about Charity Hicks. our fallen freedom fighter sister, but, you know, when one falls, 10,000 more shall rise. She's transcended, as Maria says. Maria, last couple of words.
Thank you, Donna.
You're welcome. Also, more information is available online at East Michigan Environmental Action Council. Please stay tuned, everyone, at the top of the hour for Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson. Maria will be back with us for another food fight on the last Saturday in the month of August
with Makani Temba, the executive director of the Praxis Project. Come back, y'all.